and now Evangelist David Shannon.
If you will, be opening your Bibles to Genesis, the 23rd chapter. This morning, I somewhat dread this lesson, especially with the weather outside. I'm afraid we're all going to leave here somewhat depressed this morning. It is a Bible topic and it's something we need to think about. This morning, we look to a very sad chapter in the Bible. This morning, we look to a chapter that has the very first death and burial recorded in the Bible, and that being a woman, a very faithful woman named Sarah. The fact is, Sarah is the only woman recorded in the Bible of her death and her burial. Sarah is one of the women that's mentioned in both Testaments, the Old and the New Testament, and mentioned more than once in the New Testament. And the time she's mentioned, she is given tremendous compliments for her amount of faith. In Hebrews, the 11th chapter, when many of the patriarchs are mentioned, Sarah is mentioned right there with them. And in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, in the first 6 verses, Peter has a very wonderful explanation for the way that a godly woman should live in her home. And the one example he gives of that, he goes back hundreds and hundreds and even thousands of years, and he digs up the example of Sarah and the way that she lived in her home. This morning, let us look very briefly to the story of Sarah's death. In Genesis, the 23rd chapter, let's begin reading. And Sarah was 127 years old, and these were the years, the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjathaarba, the same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abram stood up from before his dead, and he spake unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, Hearest, my Lord, thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but that thou mayest bury thy dead. As we continue reading in this story, we see that Abraham refuses to use a borrowed place to bury his wife. And so he asks them to allow him to choose a place, and he chooses a cave very in the backside of a field, and apparently there's trees around the cave. And you can just imagine how beautiful that must have been, with a field and trees and a cave. And Abraham says, that's where I want to bury my dead. And they say, Abraham, we love you so much, we'll give it to you. And he says, no, I won't bury my dead in a place given. And so he pays what the land is worth, 400 shekels of silver. And we read at the end in 19 and 20 that he did take his wife Sarah and he buried her there in the cave. Brethren, one of the hardest things for any of us on this earth to go through is the death of someone that we love very much. I don't have to tell you that. Most of you know it. It's a heartache. And it's something that we don't get over it in a day or two. And when we talk about our sorrow, when we talk about our grief, the reality is there's part of that that we never get over, if you will. You see, it hurts to have that separation. It hurts to experience what Abraham experienced. Verse 2 is our text for today. In Genesis 23 and verse 2, he began by saying the words that none of us ever want to hear about our loved ones. And he says, and Sarah died. The Hebrew writer spoke very frankly and straightforward about death. And he said in Hebrews 9:27, it is appointed unto man once to die, and after this, the judgment. So not only did he speak of the issue or the topic of death, but he brought it into the immediate thereafter judgment so that we could think about the life beforehand. And the only way we can ever gain from the sorrow and the topic of death is for us to realize what comes after and how we must prepare in our life while we are still alive. The Bible intends for you and I to understand somewhat the topic of death, although there are always questions that seem to be left unanswered. The ones that we need answers to, we can have. You see, as early as Genesis, the 3rd chapter, God was trying to help Adam realize what death would be like, at least somewhat. there Eve went and she committed her sin and took to her husband the fruit and he committed the sin. And so now God is speaking to Adam, He's speaking to Eve, and He's speaking to Satan, and He's giving the punishment that each of them must bear. And finally, with all of that in context, it's as if He's still speaking to Adam, and He says, "Thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return." God, we haven't gotten but three chapters in the story of life. Three chapters into the story of how it all began. And God says, "Now it's time for you to also know how this physical body will end. Just as I brought you up out of the dust, your physical life, the physical body, will return to that dust." Solomon struggled with this. Solomon looked at this topic, and as he was hunting for all of the excitement of life, as he was hunting for the things that seemed worthwhile, and as he tried so much knowledge, and as he tried so much money and so much power, and as he tried the wine, the women, and the song, as he tried all of the tremendous forms of entertainment, hiring the entertainers to come into his presence, he tried it all. And as he was looking at all of this and he was finding out that it was vanity, it was in somewhat that context that he also looks at the physical man. And it's almost as if he's discouraged, because he also brings out the fact that all of us physically will return to the same place. And Solomon says, that being the dust of the earth. Before that, he did bring out the fact that there is a time or a season for everything, for every purpose under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. Here, I'm sure that Abraham had enough humanity in him that he at least was tempted to ask what we oftentimes ask: God, why? God, don't you remember? And I'm just speaking for what Abraham might have thought, and especially what I might have said if I would have been in Abraham's shoes. God, you remember how faithful this woman was. God, you remember when she and I had that nice little comfortable home and we were rather wealthy there in the land, and you asked us to leave, and God, she left with me. She was faithful. God, you remember how we finally made it into Canaan, and times were hard. God, there was a famine there, and we made our mistakes. We went to Egypt, but God, we returned to you. God, we were faithful. God, you remember how we went through the heartache, and God, you remember how Sarah cried and cried and cried because she wanted a child. And God, she stayed faithful to you, even though she didn't get her child until the very latter part of her life. She didn't give up on you, God. Oh, she showed weaknesses at times, but God, she stayed with you. God, out of all the women that's alive today, why did you take my Sarah from me? You see, we all have those questions at the time of death. Why? The answer? Oh, we don't know every detail to the answer. But brethren, the point that I want us all to get from this lesson this morning is, it's a time appointed. And we all must face it. Perhaps the reason that death angers us so much is because we don't have control over it. If I want to, this very moment, I could leave this pulpit and I could go and I could get in my car and I could drive all the way across California because I'm in control. If I wanted to go and get on an airplane, I could fly all the way around the world because I can control that. But then it comes to those things in life that are out of our control. And sometimes they anger us and they hurt us. And I can't help but think, as the verse very clearly states, that Abraham mourned and he wept. That one of the reasons why is because he just wasn't ready for death at that moment. If it would have been in his hands, he would have pushed the death of Sarah back several more years, because Abraham lived several more years afterwards. But brethren, this morning, please let none of us leave this auditorium thinking that we are in control of when death will come into our lives. Just as the Hebrew writer said, it is appointed unto man once to die, let us realize that that is an appointment that is made and we haven't called and reserved it. We might be planning to live to 100 years of age, but brethren, we're not in control of that. And just as every day we have control over appointments, we might call our dentist and say, I have a toothache, I would like an appointment early afternoon. And he says, how about 1 o'clock? And we go and we call a garage and we say, my car's giving a little bit of problem and I'd like to bring it in Tuesday morning. And they say, what about 8 o'clock? And there are so many things in this life that we make the appointments and we set them to the way we want it. And brethren, let us realize, I don't care how young you are in this audience this morning, if you've reached an accountable age, don't think that death is something that's going to wait. Don't think that it's something that you're in control and you'll just put it off until you're ready. You see, one of the reasons death hurts us so badly is because that's just one of those topics we're not ever quite ready for, in the sense that we say, okay, let's do it. Oh, we are prepared so far as our spiritual being, but hardly ever do we say to those around us that we love physically, I want to leave you. Very rarely does that happen. The first phrase of our text simply says, and Sarah died. The second thing that is so important for us as we think about Sarah's death is that we realize the next phrase. The next phrase tells us the area in which she died. It says that she died being in the land of Canaan. What was Sarah doing in the land of Canaan? She was not a woman from that land. How did she ever get there? Please realize this morning. There's two reasons why Sarah ended up there, and both are very important. Number one, because she was faithful to her husband. Number two, because she was faithful to her God. And I ask all of us this day, where are we going to be when we die? And the answer better be, wherever the Lord leads us. We must die faithful to our God if we're going to have lived a life that's anything worth living upon this earth and anything worth living eternally. Here, it's a tremendous lesson in this point, and I can go to the New Testament at least two different occasions and prove to you the tremendous lesson it is that she died in the land of Canaan. You see, let's begin, though, back in the Old Testament. There were some tremendous temptations for Sarah. You know, oftentimes, I've heard individuals say, I think that people that are very beautiful or very handsome go through some types of temptation that perhaps others do not go through. I've heard that stated oftentimes. And perhaps people make a statement like that thinking that there's no one that perhaps, at least in the Bible, that could identify with that. One of the interesting things of the story of Sarah is just to try to imagine her tremendous beauty and the way it affected those around them. Can you imagine a woman being so beautiful that before she gets to a land, her husband says to her, now we've got to devise a scheme here because you're so beautiful, the Pharaoh, the king of this land, will take you away from me. And then what happens? They enter into Egypt, and this is all straight from the Bible. They enter into Egypt, and the Egyptians immediately notice the very beautiful Sarah. The princes to the Pharaoh come out, and immediately, what do? They notice they're strangers. No, they notice the beauty of Sarah. They take her, and they bring her before Pharaoh himself, and immediately Pharaoh wants to take her into his palace and to make her one of his women. Brethren, Sarah knew the temptations that could come. I believe that it is a tremendous compliment that when Sarah died of 127 years of age, she died faithful to her husband. A few decades later, they would go and they would stand before King Abimelech. And what would happen? Because of Sarah's beauty, the same thing would happen. King Abimelech would want to take her in and to make her one of his women. And they go through this temptation again. But what do we find? We find each time that she returns faithful to her husband. Yes, they made some mistakes along the way. They lied about some things. But what stands loud and clear through her life and even into her death is that she was faithful to Abraham. And then, if you will, turn with me to 1 Peter, the third chapter. In 1 Peter, the third chapter, Peter would want to write a few important lessons for women to learn. and he would go back and he would use Sarah as his wonderful example for women to learn. He begins in verse 1 and 2 of talking about submission, even if your husband is a non-believer. And he says, likewise, ye wives, we're in 1 Peter 3 and 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Now notice this aspect. Now we're looking at something just a little different here. He's talked about subjection. Now notice verse 3 and 4. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner. Now what manner are you talking about, Peter? Peter says, after not concentrating on the outward person, but concentrating on the inward person, Paul says, after that manner, in old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection even to their own husband, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham. Peter, that's interesting. That's very interesting, Peter, that you would pick out one of the most beautiful women that lived throughout our studies of the Bible. And you would say about her, she's a good example. Not because she concentrated more on her outward beauty, but because she concentrated more on her inward beauty. You see, Peter used an example that helps us realize there's nothing wrong with being beautiful. There's nothing wrong in dressing in such a way that it's attractive, because surely Sarah did, because men found her attractive. Well, what's the point, Peter? Peter says, listen, the point is she concentrated more on her inward beauty of a meek, God-controlled life, and on a quiet spirit, someone that's peaceful, a peacemaker, developed a tranquility, a calmness in her home. Yes, women have the ability to wreck their home, or they have ability to be a very stabilizing force in the home. And Sarah seemed to be that was the stabilizing force. She had an inner, meek, and quiet spirit. What did she do? She trusted God. She was considered a holy woman set apart. And she was the one that was in submission to her husband. How do we define submission? Peter defines in the very next verse to say, she obeyed Abraham. This morning, not just the women present, I ask all of us, if we were to die this very moment, where would it be said that we died? Abraham died in the land of Canaan. If you go back and study Sarah's life, or Sarah died in the land of Canaan, if you go back and study her life, you're going to see the fact that the only reason she was in Canaan is because she was faithful to her husband and she was faithful to her God. Hebrews, the 11th chapter. Turn back just a few pages with me there. Hebrews, the 11th chapter, in verse 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because... why? Why did she deliver a child past age? Because she judged Him, God, faithful, who had promised. We skip down to verse 13. And it says, these all died, talking about Sarah and the patriarchs. They all died in faith. Now notice this list here. In faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth. Brethren, that's a list that we all ought to strive to maintain in our life. A list to be able to say, I believe in the promises that are here, and even though I haven't seen all of the spiritual blessings, I'm going to live my life based upon the fact that I believe they're there. And it's going to change the way I live. This faith, the New Testament faith, the system of faith, is going to persuade me. And it's going to cause me to embrace it, hold it dearly. And it's going to cause me to look at this earth and say, this earth is not home. How many of us are ready to say, Alabama's not my home? I'm just a pilgrim here in Alabama. I'm just a sojourner. I'm going to live my life serving God here, but what I'm really looking for, what I'm striving for, what I wake up every day dwelling on my heart is that heavenly home. Please, please pay close attention to these next two verses. We're still in Hebrews 11. Verse 14, talking about Sarah and Abraham. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country. That is a heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He hath prepared for them a city. If you and I were to die this very moment, could it be said, he or she died longing for that heavenly city. He or she died according to the faith. He or she died, their life reflected that they had been persuaded to live for Christ. Their endurance reflected that they had embraced Christ and His new covenant. And the way they looked at things, the way they longed for heaven, lets us know that they died in the faith. The third point, and very quickly. Number one, Sarah died. And also from this we see that where she died reflected the life that she lived. But notice Abraham. The last part of that verse tells us that Abraham mourned and that Abraham wept. Please realize that that's only natural. You know, there have been some that have very foolishly said, well, if you have someone in your family that dies and they're a member of the church, you shouldn't shed a tear. Brethren, anyone that says that has not read God's book very closely. Jesus went to the grave of a close friend. And Jesus knew that He was about to raise that friend from the dead, but he still wept. Abraham knew that his wife was faithful. Abraham had lived beside that woman day in and day out, and he'd seen her give up her home. He'd seen her travel all over what seemed to be the country. He had seen her sacrifice so much and put so much faith in God. But when she died, he cried. And not only did he cry, but he went out and he made careful plans about where that he and she and the rest of the family would be buried. And not only did he make careful plans, he even spent some money on it. You see, many of the things that we do today, they're acceptable. That's what Abraham was doing, and God didn't rebuke him. But notice this point. As he wept, nothing he says and nothing that is recorded leads us to believe that he wept as those that had no hope, as Paul speaks of in 1 Thessalonians 4. You see, brethren, the best thing you and I can leave to our survivors is a good life. The best thing that we can leave behind is the inner peace that passes understanding, that we can stand by the grave and we can say they lived a good life and they died, as far as we know, faithful to our God. I want to tell you something this morning, and it might seem a little straightforward, and if it does, so be it. If you're not living a faithful life to God, you ought to be ashamed to go to your grave for the misery that you're going to cause your survivors that are left behind, as they have to think every day of not seeing you for an eternity. As they have to think every day of not being able to celebrate heaven with you. I believe that one of the most selfish things that a person can do is to be in a family where other Christians dwell and refuse to live for their God. Abraham, he wept. He was so sorry. But Abraham didn't weep as those that have no hope. Because that's a weeping and that's a pulling at the heart that hurts so terrible. This morning, I ask you, do you know? Do you really know that there's an appointed time? If you could ask God His calendar, He could tell you the date, the year, even the minute that you'll die. Are you ready for that? Also, please keep in mind the only way you can be ready is by the life you live. faithful to your God? Are you faithful? It's the greatest thing that you can leave to your survivors, or at least one of the greatest things. This morning, as we look to the New Testament for our guidelines of being faithful, we see that Jesus Christ taught the gospel when He came and lived a perfect life, and then He left the doctrine for the apostles to carry on. And they taught a gospel that said you must believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. You must be willing to repent or turn away from sins, confess before men that Jesus is the Son of God, and be baptized for the remission of those sins, and then live Christ-like thereafter. Perhaps this morning you've strayed, you've made your mistakes. Please notice, Sarah made her mistakes. There was times when Sarah laughed at God. There were times when Sarah walked away from where God told her to go. But what we do see is that Sarah came back. And Sarah was mentioned in Peter as a fine example of what a woman should be. She was mentioned in Hebrews of a fine example of what a Christian should be. The question this morning isn't, could you ever come back? You can. God will forgive you. He promises to. The question this morning is, will you come back? The weak don't ever make it. The strong return to Him. If we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and as we sing.